So what I do is I don't like to self-isolate or self-exclude myself. But I mean, I sometimes guess, you know, the word, what's that song? The words get in the way. So I didn't want to provoke all these, you know, I would like to be able to say, basically, yeah, every time I drop some science and I tell the truth, these feminists, these black women want to come at me. And then, you know, if I said that, oh, the black women are attacking me. The black women are bringing me down, holding me back. Black woman, you know, I would, you know, have a lot more larger following, you know. Maybe I can make some corny ass documentaries. Maybe I can get $500,000 for a school that ain't manifested. You know, and maybe I could be up in that arena. But my words get in the way. I got to find that song. I don't even know what that song is. But my words get, I keep, you know, self-sabotaging. Because it's a relatively easy group. You don't really need any backing. You don't need, so I don't know. Hopefully, we're not even halfway through 2017. Maybe I will get in the, if I can't beat a silverback, we'll be in the entourage of the manly men. So I don't deliberately go out here and try to spark. I don't really go out and try to spark beef with anybody. But the main group, I would like to not, you know, provoke and have open ongoing hostilities with is, I don't know, what's the modern word for it? Cisgendered, heteronormative, masculine, whatever, men. I want to be with my group. I want to be able to hang with my crew. I want to be able to go, you know, play basketball and spit and fight and cuss and do the things men like to do amongst other men. I don't want to be isolated from my particular demographic. But they keep running me off. Like, get your ass out of here. You know, because my words get in the way. But anyway, that's not even what I'm talking about. I just wanted to say, I was going to say that I get the most social media hate and hostility from feminists because, you know, they're often very vocal. But I find that when I run afoul of these macho men who always telling somebody about being emotional, always dissing somebody, they tend to, you know, want to run to the social media police, get you reported, get you kicked off and just really cry, jump all in your slide into your DMs with they, you know, insults and threats. And, you know, I just had another, you know, dude all in threatening to sue me over some utter nonsense that I said months ago. I even forgot I said it. You know, so these dudes, man, I mean, yo, I don't like to expose people, you know, especially when they send me personal messages and emails. I don't want to be that kind of a jerk. I have enough trouble, believe it or not. I'm having trouble getting people to come on the show. I don't know why folks think that I'm trying to trap them. You know, I have to reach out to people that I fully ideologically align with to get them on the show. Because if it's somebody that's divergent, you know, they don't want to holler at your boy. But again, I don't go out and say their name. Oh, you know, so-and-so don't want to come on the show. But this isn't a trap, you know. If anything, the worst I'm going to do is let people self-expose. I'm not going to try to, you know, call people out. I don't need that controversy. I don't need nobody in here. I put respect on names. I do, believe it or not. You know, if I'm going to mock anything, it's ideas, concepts, larger things. I try not to target individuals unless they're just absolutely, utterly absurd. But I don't even reach out to those people, you know, to provide them with a platform. But long story short, that's not even what I want to talk about. Let me get out of that rabbit hole. You know, let me get out of that rabbit hole. You know, but I see a lot of, you know, Afro-sexists behaving in such a ways that they condemn a feminine men or feminized men or women for behaving. You know, just because you're grunting while you're acting out doesn't mean that, you know, it's any more acceptable for this irrational lashing out at other people for silliness. But that's not even the topic that I wanted to address at this moment. What I actually, for real, really wanted to talk about was, there's this whole concept. Now I'm coming back to the brothers. I'm going to see if I can get back in the entourage. A lot of sisters, this broke nigga rhetoric. Broke nigga sleeping on his couch. I mean, the first time if somebody comes out and assaults or insults or starts to attack, you know, went black women or target black feminists or start to say anything that even I agree is utter nonsense. A lot of the retorts are dwelling around, you a broke nigga, you ain't got no job, you ain't got this, you ain't got that. And then I had another feminist come to me, and I wasn't even talking about the gender war that we've accepted, that we've jumped into. You know, European man, European woman been fighting a gender war since the days of Spartacus. You know, since Zeus and Helena were raping and pillaging humanity for their pleasure. It's been a long time standing, but now black folks have adopted that gender war, or worse, that we've been thrown into a gender conflict society. So, and then we integrated into that society, whatever. But I wasn't even talking about that. I was talking about something completely, I guess, gender, race, economics, class is an element of everything. It has an undertone or overtone or a direct topic. But I was talking about the concept of leadership and accountability. And I don't care if it's a female leader or a male leader. I was just talking about those concepts. And I didn't even say any specific leaders. I'm just saying our understanding and our approach to leadership. And a feminist jumps on there, on that discussion line, and states, black men supposed to be protectors. Black men this, black men, and black men ain't nothing. Broke niggas, nothing, nothing. And I said, well, what? You know, like, I okay, fine, that's true. What? I give that all, but what does that have to do with the topic? What does that have to do with, you know, the community as a whole identifying? And then she could have even related it back. She didn't even try to pretend like, well, when black men are in leadership, this, or black women lead, the history of black, you know, you'll see that when black women, you know, are in leadership positions or have positions of authority, it plays out this way versus black men. There is a difference. She didn't even tie it into it. She just took it, bow, 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 you know. Never, she took a shot in the gender war, you know. And I just said, okay, fine, but whatever you're saying, what does that have to do? So, you know, before I even did that, I clicked on her image. And I looked at her feed, and it was black man murders black woman. Black man does another horrendous thing. Black man commits another atrocity. Black man, black man, black man, har, 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 har. Which is her right. Which is, you know, if she wants to be the one to say, hey, I'm going to make sure I reach out to the community and let them know all the crimes that black men are committing against black women. I think that's a service. I think, you know, if those crimes are going unreported, if the victims are going unacknowledged and so on, I'm not even against that. You know. But, you know, if somebody like there's the playoffs, apparently the NBA playoffs, and somebody's taping something that's very important to me, veganism. So if somebody says something, you know, I don't know, Russell Westbrook, you know, is particularly adept at chasing the ball in the most recent games. He was on that ball harder than any other man was on that ball. And this, and then I'm not going to be, well, veganism is the most ecological approach. It is the solution. Veganism, veganism, veganism. Even though I know it's important, that's just not the topic right there. Or at least I could, you know, tie it into vegan. Like, you know, well, I hope that the hardwood floors that they're playing on are sourced from a sustainable, you know, lumber source, or some, you know, and somehow at least pretend like, even if I'm trying to turn the conversation to veganism or ecology or sustainability, at least, you know, try to pretend like I'm not trying to hijack the conversation. At least be more tactful. I don't know. But anyway, she blocked me. But before she blocked me, she called me a pussy. You know, as an insult to offend me. Now, that's something, anyway, anything I can do to be associated with that. I'm not the president, you know, I'm not qualified to be president, so I don't go around grabbing and assaulting women. But any way I can be voluntarily, consensually associated with that word, that concept, that reality, doesn't offend me. Actually, I like the word. It sounds good to me. You know, it sounds, you know, so. Hey, I wasn't offended, but I knew her intent was to offend me. And just got me thinking about that whole broke nigga this, niggas ain't got nothing. And there's another prominent feminist who will remain nameless, who's always talking about black men's inability to economically provide for black women and where black men collectively are on the economic totem pole, and in many regions are below women, you know, and how we ain't got nothing. And she, there was this post she said about un-nigga, you a un-nigga, you unemployed, uneducated, un-something, you uninsured, you a un-nigga. This is a feminist. And niggas are, and one thing we have to, whenever I hear the word broke, that's what they used to call the process of turning a rebellious African into a docile slave. It's the breaking system, like you break a buck, or they would have other words for it, but seasoning a slave, seasoning was one thing called, or but one of the most common, you know, colloquialisms was you break a slave, you break their will, you break them down. And so black folks are now saying black people who don't achieve, who don't fully appropriately integrate and achieve within the economy are broke. And it's something we say rather casually. I'm broke, man. I don't have money. You know, you could be of full health. You could have a full sense of mind. You could have your culture and strong in your, but if you don't have fiat currency, you're broken. You know, you don't say I'm under-resourced, I'm exploited, I'm oppressed, I'm broke. And so when I hear, you know, black women saying you a broke nigga, well, really, Jordan could be considered broke. Not because of the presence or lack of money, but he has no hostility or critique or opposition to the system. Even though with his resources, his talent and standing, he could be a standing threat to the system. But he's not. So he's broken. He's absolutely no threat. They could give Jordan $1 billion. He's no threat to other, to the establishment. They could give Jordan, elect Jordan or Obama president. They're no threat to the establishment. To me, that's what broken, when you really look at it in the historical, in the real context, that's what, it doesn't mean you have money or you lack money. It means that you are completely docile and in no way a threat to the institutions or power structures that impose upon you, that oppress you, that violate you. You know, that's truly what. But here's another angle to that. Here's another side to that that I think that feminists don't understand when they talk about broke or calling people un-nigga, unemployed, uninsured, unhoused, uneducated. In this system, in order to achieve, everybody knows you need a certain mentality. You need a certain disposition. Whether you call it values, whether you call it drive, whether you call it whatever you call it, you need a certain psychological that is also, you need a certain intellectual, you need a certain, you know, physical drive, willing to engage in labor, willing to discipline yourself. But there's a certain fundamental mentality that you need in order to achieve. And it's something that we try to indoctrinate ourselves with. We try to impose on our children. Even the African-centered schools try to put this fundamental mentality into the children. Work hard, be willing to sacrifice, discipline. But there's an element to that. That if you don't have a certain fundamental key characteristics, you're not going to succeed in American society. This is a capitalist society. This is a competitive society. This is a white society. And if you're not capitalist, white, and competitive, if you're not capitalist, if you don't have that mentality, you don't have that hunger, that drive, you're not going to achieve. But here's the thing. How is it that black women, black feminists in particular, want to hold the black man to the European economic status, material requirements, but not expect us to develop and house the psychological, the patriarchal, the savage aspects of that? Like, what was the quote that people, Frederick Douglass, said people that want, you know, that want freedom without a demand. They want something without the other thing. You can't have the beautiful coastline. You can't live on a beach. It's going to be a hurricane from time to time. It's going to be tidal waves from time to time. You know, and yes, you could love nature, but the ticks and the mosquitoes, they out there. You know what I'm saying? Everything is comes with something. You know, so sometimes, especially feminists, if you truly want a humane, civil, anti-patriarchal, anti-hierarchy man, sometimes that man is not going to have the most money. He's not going to be the tiger-eyed shark that's going to go out into a capitalist and dog-eat-dog capitalism and achieve and bring home buckets of resources and piles of money and dump it on your head. That a lot of times the guy that has the social, emotional profile that you want, the ideological profile that you want, is the exact same characteristics that make him less likely to achieve within this system. Because even when you take guys that on the surface seem like nice guys, look at Russell Simmons. Russell Simmons does yoga. He even gives his interviews barefoot with his feet all, his legs twisted around his neck. He's very shy, a soft-spoken guy, you know. And, you know, you would seem like, hey, this is the kind of guy that the ladies love. You know, he seems humane. He's into to esoteric stuff and philosophies. But he is a ruthless, cutthroat businessman. I'm not even going to get into his history. Just know that. He is very ruthless and cutthroat. And you mean to tell me that unless they're a maniac, unless they're an absolute sociopath, there's no way you can go cutthroats at work and come home and be the gender neutral, gender respecting, or whatever these requirements are. And so feminists say, I'm not obligated to be with a broke nigga. I'm not obligated to try to save or rescue. But, you know, even if you want to be a black feminist, which I don't think all feminism is white feminism. I think talking about white feminism is redundant. That's like saying white capitalism or white Christianity. That stuff is inherently white. And I think it's a mistake whether you're trying to Africanize Jesus was a black man, whether you're trying to Africanize it is worse, is even a greater disservice to our culture, our heritage and reality, our health. But and it's something I've never been able to reconcile. And, you know, I've been on panels with feminists. I've had one-on-one discussions. Lord, I've had countless, you know, Twitter finger exchanges with feminists. But I've never been able to reconcile this. You want us to have all of the material requirements and you want us to achieve materially, economically, within a patriarchal sexist system. And to achieve and to advance in a patriarchal sexist system, you got to be patriarchal and sexist. You got to grab pussies if you want to get up to the top. I really, and I've been in corporate, I've worked in the corporate sector. I've worked in the service sector. I've worked in many sectors of the economy. And yes, women, sexism and patriarchy are present. And I haven't seen even women. Oh, and here's the rub. And I'm not even talking about men. Because when women get in there, look at the female CEO of Hewlett Packard. How she get there? Because she's the kind of woman that will say, I'm going to shut down the daycare centers in our headquarters, corporate headquarters. Because women, you know, they're upstairs working and their babies are downstairs. They tend to go check on their babies because the babies are close. Leave your baby 100 miles away from you. So even women, when they integrate into this system, Michelle Obama, the patron saint of black womanhood and arms, black woman arms. When she stands there and holds that placard, bring black our girls. And she's giving, but at the same time she holds that bring our girls home. She's standing there giving Obama shoulder rubs as he pushes the red button on Libya. And to bomb mothers and in every rape and war go hand in hand. You never have had a war in the history of humanity. You never, let me back that up. There's no modern war. There's no modern industrial war. And many, most ancient wars. I ain't going to say never because I know somebody will go find some obscure, you know, tribal conflict in between, you know, a Polynesian island somewhere where they, you know, men got together, slaughtered each other over some conflict and there was no rape and pillage. Okay, so not all wars, but all modern wars that use guns, projectiles, every single one of them. Every single war has had a systematic process of rape. Even in these soldiers you see in the airport or in Walmart and you say, thank you for your service. Those dudes, if they weren't raping, they were facilitating and setting up a systematic rape. But hey, all you got to do is go to any search engine and put in military rape. And there's a pandemic of soldiers raping allies, the women who are fighting next to you. Even though the women got the carbine, whatever. Women got the shotgun. Women got the training. They're still being assaulted. So anyway, so Obama, being one of the few presidents from the day he walked into the office to the day he walked out, perpetual war president, perpetual state of warfare. He expanded war. And at that same time, while he was pushing the red buttons, signing off on killing hundreds of thousands of people, he's getting shoulder rubs from Michelle. She's a part of it. She's all in it. She's in it. Probably the only first lady that's absolutely innocent from the crimes of her husband is probably Melania. She's like, I ain't trying to, you know, don't put that on me. I ain't with, my name is Bennett. And she ain't in it. She won't even move in with the dude. They, even when they were together, it's reported that they didn't sleep in the same room. You know, she was only contractually obligated to share, you know, 30 minutes of physical space with him every other month. She met her contractual. She obviously hates this man. And it's pretty obvious why. But all the other first ladies, Laura Bush, Barbara Bush, especially Hillary Clinton, come on. Maybe, you know, Carter's wife, too. She kept to her business. She did her needlepoint. It was like, you go do what you do. But anyway, you're getting my point. What was my point? Even when women aspire and reach the heights of this sexist system, they behave in ways that are sexist, racist. Black people can't be racist, but they can sure facilitate and operate and be cogs in the racist machine. And they could work for and sustain racist institutions. But they're not acting on their own. Shoot, a dog can guard a mansion, but a dog can't sign off on a mortgage. You know what I'm saying? So which is it? Do you want this, you know, civil, sane, respectful, humble? Because, you know, one of the things which surprised me that a feminist, an aggressive feminist, dare I say militant feminist, will say to me about black men are supposed to be protectors and black men are not our protectors. If you know anything about protection, the protector has to have a certain level of control and authority over the protectee. And I don't care if it's a parent, I don't care if it's a spouse who wants to be protected, or if it's, you know, a paid situation where I'm paid to be a bodyguard for Michael Jackson. If you're under something or someone's protection, they exercise a level of control over you. The police are there to protect and serve, which by law, they have a certain amount of authority to detain you, to direct you, to kill you even for your protection. I ain't claiming to understand it, but I ain't one. I don't call for protection. Right? But she insulted black men because of our failures to protect. But if I'm a protector, if I'm a bodyguard, I'm like, oh, step back a second. No, stand over here. You can't go there. You can't wear that. You can't do that because it will. But you want full autonomy and freedom and protection. That's not how it works. No, you could go out and hire the most elite bodyguard in the world and pay him $10 million to protect you. But he's not going to work. He's going to give up if you say, well, you can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me where to go. You don't tell me nothing. So, you know, if you're a feminist and say, hey, the level of protection that you're going to obligate the man to is inversely proportional to the level of autonomy you can exercise in his presence. And I'm sorry, it's the same thing. I am obligated to protect my children. So when I'm out on the bike with my son, it doesn't have to be. It's not inherently repressive. It's not inherently oppressive and exploitative, but it has a strong potential. You are always vulnerable to your protectors. Because if your protector is to be, instead of a benevolent protector, become a repressive protector, it's a thin line. So I'm out with my sons, and I'm like, hey, boy, ride your skateboard on the sidewalk. Put on your helmet. You know, don't ride down that street. Stop at every light and wait till I catch up to you. I'm putting all these restrictions because I'm protecting him. You know? And if I was like, well, I'm not obligated to protect him. Do you, player? So feminist calls for protection. And then, you know, violate all of the agreement, the contractual. If you call on someone to protect you, then you are inherently, automatically giving them a level of control over you. And we all know how feminists feel about men controlling them. And I'm actually surprised that a feminist, and I mean, I got it on doc. I should screenshot this so somebody say I'm lying. Feminists would never say a man is obligated to protect. But you don't even got to, I ain't even got to prove it. Just go find you a black feminist and say, hey, black men are obligated to protect. Yes, black men have failed to protect black women. Then it would be an appropriate response to say, well, how effective are you at submitting to the instructions and oversight of the black man? You know, there was just that new celebrity that Cash Me Outside. How about that? That girl, I don't know her name. But she has a bodyguard now because everybody wants to catch her outside. Everybody want to whoop her ass for her own good, for her own sake. I know every black scarf wearing woman in the world just got a belt, you know, a golden belt in a golden case. Like, ooh, she need her ass beat. Even the sisters like, we don't hit children. You know, everybody want to beat that little girl's ass for her own sake, you know, just to save her. Never anybody in the history of, you know, but she has a bodyguard. And this girl is all mouth. We all seen her. Cash Me Outside. How about that? Ooh, I wish you. Ooh, I'm a new. She's all mouth. But when a TMZ reporter approached her in the airport to ask her some stupid questions about stupidness, because it's a stupid society, and the bodyguard steps very gently and was like, yo, step back. You move here. And was distracting the girl. Moved through the airport. He was controlling her because she pays him for that. There's no way to protect. I mean, what in the movie The Bodyguard? I've never seen Bodyguard, but I've seen little snippets and a lot of parodies of it. But wasn't she like her character, Whitney Hutton, was running around crazy and the guy was really struggling to protect her because she didn't listen. She didn't follow orders. But let a black man stand up and say, my woman ain't listening to me. She's not following my instruction. Therefore, I can't protect her. You know, tell me he wouldn't be jumped down his throat. I should go on social media right now. But then, you know, I have to block my wife from my account and talk about she. I can't protect that woman. She don't listen. She don't follow my orders. Therefore, and I actually have told her that about certain things. You know, I tell her, hey, what is it? It's something real recent. I'm like, hey, you know, Erica, don't do that. I'm like, well, you don't listen. When the consequences come at you, you on your own. What do you want me to do about it? Like one time she took the rollerblades out. And I'm like, hey, it's busy. You going out on rollerblades to go to the food co-op. She's young, in her 20s. Very young lady. Very hard-headed. I can say that because I'm her protector, right? I can make those assessments. You have to assess your client if you're protecting. Anyway, she had an accident on the rollerblades. You know, had a spill out. You know, actually, you know, cut her eye. Hit something. And when she came home, after me saying, oh, don't do that. Don't do that now. Hey, don't, you know, I'm the old black man. Hey, now, watch yourself now. And she didn't feel that I had an appropriate level of sympathy for her accident. But I'm like, I told you not to be out on the rollerblades, out here trying to be cute with your day stooks on, up and down these streets in these rollerblades, going to co-op. And, you know, you got to go get groceries. Who go get groceries on a roller skate? That's too hip. I know we hippies. I know we're hippies. I know we're out there with eco, want to save the planet and all that. Yeah, but why don't you take your bike with the basket on the back of it? You want a rollerblade and be cute. But, you know, that's how it goes. If you don't follow the instructions of your protector, they're going to be like, you're going to get what you get. And then here's another thing in terms of money. Talking about I'm unemployed, I'm uninsured, I'm unhoused, I'm uneducated. In a capitalist, whenever you put money in something, whenever you're giving, whenever something is financially obligated to you, that's ownership. Possession is 9/10 of the law. So you're a feminist. You want your autonomy. You want to do what you want to do. But you want your man to have a certain credit score. I don't know. But in a capitalist mentality, for him to have that capitalist mentality, I'm putting money on it, then I have a certain level of ownership and control. Again, You're obligated to me. Look how much money I spent on you. I ain't saying it's right. I'm saying it's the reality. And feminists are perpetuating. They think they can. You can't have, or there shouldn't be, this is the very concept. You got feminists that are capitalist. And how does that jive? You have feminists that are Christians, feminists that are Muslims. You have feminists trying to impose feminism in inherently anti-feminist. You know, that's like a vegan cattle rancher. How does it work? How do you hold true to your so-called ideology? At the same time, you are affixed to, you are advocating and advancing concepts and behaviors and protocols and institutions and standards that are in direct contradiction and violation to your ideology. And then you're going to block me on social media? I'm the bad guy. Say goodbye to the bad guy. You know, I'm the bad guy. You need me. You feminists need me. You need me. They dug out the bad guy. I don't understand it. But again, my brain is saturated with testosterone. I welcome any feminist to call and explain this to me. I would think that. Now, here's what I would say. Because real talk, a lot of feminist analysis is really good. You should read it. You should follow a lot of. Now, bell hooks is bat guano insane. I want to say the other word for guano or feces. She's crazy. But there's a lot of cogent, competent, rational feminists. But their analysis is divergent from the solutions that they suggest. Because if you were truly a feminist, you would have to be anti-capitalism, anti-established religion. Even if you want to play spiritual and you know, talking to the cosmos, all that Oprah nonsense, fine. But you can't be, you know, but you want to keep Christianity, you want to keep capitalism, and you want to keep standards that say a man has to be a go-getter, a protector, and everything that gave birth to this whole concept that men dominate women, men own women, women should obey men. You want to keep all the elements that create, that are the foundation of that mentality, but you want to do away with the mentality. How, Sway? Y'all don't got the answers. And I'm saying, y'all got me doing all these silly ass impressions and cliches, but I'm just out of options. I'm flabbergasted. So I'm going to say silly things. You have literally flabbered all my gaskets. And then she going to block me, and this is somebody that I knew, or at least I thought I knew, that I've had engagements, you know, civil and debates. But you're going to call me a pussy? Which, I mean, I guess you were on a contradiction palooza. You could have called me a dick. You know? But you called me a... And then you I mean... And all I did was basically try to pose these same questions, sir, as it doesn't make sense. And there's another feminist out there who has yet to block me, but has cursed me out more times than my wife almost. No, ain't nobody going to get that record. Ain't nobody going to get that record. That's Wilt Chamberlain's record, right? But almost, damn near, I had to go check my marriage certificate and make sure this woman's name wasn't on it, because she's always in my face. Yeah, that's sexist, right? To suggest that women always nag, you know. But hey, there's always a little tinge of truth in any stereotype. But anyway, I had to check my birth certificate and make sure I wasn't married to this woman, as much as she's all in my grill, complaining to me about what I'm doing and what I ain't doing. But she's saying the same stuff, broke niggas. And I just think, I don't mind, you know, as someone who, you know, frequently mocks and demeans and makes fun of people I disagree with, I'm all for rolling on people and cracking on people. But there's certain insults, I think, as a people, if we have respect for our ancestors, respect for our past historical plight and our current suffering, there's just certain things I don't think we should use as insults. But again, I'm not going to break down and collapse when I hear it. Somebody says, you a hotel. Oh, how dare you? Oh, you know, I'm just like, well, could you think of something else? Something that is not as culturally insensitive, or... You know, another thing is calling black people broke, you know, and outside of it's gone beyond just the old, you know, colloquialism like, hey, can I borrow a dollar? You know, I'm broke, man. Get out of here. But nah, it's really going to the point of like getting back to the fundamental concept of you're a black man who's unfit for this system. So you're a broken black man. Psychologically, economically, emotionally, nigga, you broke. I don't hear it as much used against, yeah, it's used, yes, let me take that back, but it ain't broke man, it's broke these broke bitches. Tariq Nasheed and a lot of these guys, Sotomayor, I don't know if Umar said it, but Brother Polite, oh, broke bitch, broke bitch, broke, broke. So we're calling each other broke, which is another way, or I guess are we gonna reclaim that too, like we done with nigga? Are we going to try to like, but you know, the concept of in the context that broken is used is when an African would come here and being snatched away from his home wasn't enough. Being put in a slave dungeon wasn't enough. To be raped himself or watch his loved ones be raped, mutilated, branded wasn't enough. Then the horrible middle passage in the hulls of the slave ship, you know. Having the acid from urine eat away at your skin. Having the bacteria from other people's vomit and your own vomit eat away at your skin. And then to get off in an alien land under the total absolute power of a pathological aggressor, enslaver. If all of that wasn't enough to break you, if you weren't broke, and then they would send you to the Caribbean or other places where there are camps that are specifically designed to break your will. And for many of us, just the capturing from us home was enough to break us. I mean, there were so many atrocities between being a free African and being an enslaved African in the Americas, in the Caribbean, in Brazil, in Chile, in the United States, or even in Canada. There was enough going on there to break. But some of us, we still wasn't getting with it. We still wasn't getting with the program. So then they would send us to these specifically designed plantations to break our people. Women and men. If you weren't broken. And when you call a black person broke today, that essentially means they are not getting with the system. They are not integrated. They are not working. They have not achieved the fundamental standards. And whether that standard is good job and a good credit score, or that fundamental standards is picking 250 pounds of cotton in your 18-hour work shift, working from can to can't, from can see to can't see. Whatever the requirements that the dominant society puts on you, black man or black woman, if you fail to meet those fundamental requirements put on you by your enemy, put on you by your oppressor, put on you by an insane, sick, racist system, if you fail to meet those requirements, then you are broke, or you have to be broken, or you haven't been broken. I'm just saying it's something we should consider in this ongoing struggle for liberation, to reclaim our identities, to reclaim the world. I just think it's something we should consider now that since, you know, a lot of times when ideas, terminologies, or events enter into the lexicon or our consciousness or our gain our attention, it's a time to look a little deeper. I mean, what does it mean to be a successful black? Is Obama a successful black man? Should we really be encouraging? Is Obama broke? I'm sure his credit score, I don't even know. Isn't it 800? You know. Most beloved black man in the world. But is he broken? Is he fixed? Hey, that's another, you know, going the other way. Hey, fixed, what's that mean? Neutered, spayed? I see. You know, language is very powerful. You know. And words, how we use words, how we interpret words, and everything, you know, you have to be, that's a part of being conscious. Really understanding things in depth. And I know sometimes it can be annoying, but it's just something to think about. And also, I really do think it's a contradiction that feminists want black men to be all, to achieve all that America has to offer, but have none of the characteristics that America breeds and encourages in black men. How are we supposed to do that? You want me to live underwater, but you want to deny me gills. This is something to consider. This is Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680. You can call in 312-985-7834 if I haven't fully alienated everyone yet this morning. And believe it or not, that was not the topic. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about this first 100 days nonsense. But you have to compare and contrast. You know, looking at Obama's first 100 days, Trump's first 100 days, which is a stupid landmark. It's really a senseless landmark. First 100 days. Don't really mean that. But, hey, this is a soundbite society. You know, the average publication is written at a fourth to sixth grade level. It's a dumbed down society. So, you know, let's just roll with it. We don't want to be broken. We don't want to be outside and fail to meet the basic standards. You know, I don't know. But actually, it's just a contradiction. It seems like if you're broke, you know, because by a lot of these black women's standards, Malcolm X would have been broke. Malcolm X had a car, but he didn't own his house. His bankroll was not that fat. He wasn't living lavish. You know, the agency that he'd given his life to, the institution, the cult that he had given his life to, had pretty much isolated him. And he was very dependent on benefactors, people who believed in his work. You know, Muhammad Ali and others were buying his plane tickets. Red Fox was actually a good friend that kicked in to help Malcolm X and other individuals. So he was dependent on his friends. He was a scrub, I guess, by modern standards. Malcolm X was a scrub. Malcolm X was all I have is my mind, my analysis, and all the reading that I've done. Malcolm X was a grand organizer, but Malcolm X never figured out how to profit from his brilliance. He knew how to give it. He knew how to articulate it. He knew how to set up structures and mobilize people. He knew how to do, but he never really sat down and like, wait, how do I get paid off of this? So Malcolm X would have been broke. Malcolm X would have been sitting on the passenger side of his, you know, best friend's ride. You know, riding around in Muhammad Ali's Cadillac on the passenger side. Not that he'd be trying to holler at any y'all. He had, you know, Betty. But I'm just saying, by the standards of today. I mean, heck, Dr. King had a PhD. Dr. King could have made big money. Very charismatic. You know, but, you know, he never reached his potential. He couldn't even be leader of the Southern Baptist Convention. And everybody loves King now. We got a King monument and a King holiday. But at the time of his death, he was not the most popular guy. You know, and we see the speeches and him standing up there giving those grand speeches. But a lot of times they don't scan the audience. Sometimes the church is more than half empty. Where you got some Reverend Chicken Ring, Reverend Hoop and Holler, got a packed house. They have to do 4-5 services. King didn't even have his own church that he was running because he was too busy out trying to save the world. Marcus Garvey would have been broke. They said at the time of his arrest and deportation, the thing that he owned most was, you know, like he had a bunch of small African artifacts and trinkets that he would spend a lot of meticulous time cleaning and maintaining and arranging. That was his only material holding, and it wasn't like anything that was hyper value. It had a lot of personal and ideological value to Garvey, but Garvey didn't pocket any money. He was overseeing millions of dollars, and by today's standards, probably $1 billion industry, Black Star Line, all of that. He didn't pocket a dime, you know. And a lot of times, his wives would have to go out and work and pay for him and kick money back to him. So Marcus Garvey would, by the standards a lot of these feminists are holding, a lot of our icons, a lot of our historical icons, men, would have been broke. I got a caller. Good. I'm glad they got in before the break. Hello, caller. You're listening to and you're calling in to the Bro Diallo Show. State your name, your alias, and where you calling from.
Hey, brother. This is Dolfo calling from Jackson, Mississippi.
Hey, what's up, man? Are you one of these broke niggas? Are you one of these unemployed, uninsured, uneducated? Are you broke?
Yeah, that's what probably many of them would say.
Shame on you. They saw the house that I live in
and the car I drive and all that kind of foolishness. But
is your car is it German engineered car?
Nah, man.
Are your suits tailored, man?
Nah, unfortunately not.
Okay.
They suits I've been given.
So you broke too.
That I wear.
Why are you wasting time calling the show? You need to be out there getting it. I shouldn't even be here. I should be in these streets getting it.
Yeah,
but hey, let me stop messing with you, bro. What you want, man? What you got for us today?
No, I was just calling because I couldn't call in earlier because I was running, and I was just listening to the show while I was running, and the thought came to me that everything that you were saying this morning And many, most of the stuff that you say all the time that I've listened to indicates one critical thing, that many of us, we think slavery or oppression of our people was somewhere back then, or slavery is done with. We say that we're done with slavery, but slavery is not done with us.
Right.
And it shows a deep, mental damage that has happened that needs to be addressed amongst our people. First, we have to realize how psychologically damaged these people have, what these people have done to us, so that we can fix it. Many times I'm engaged with people in organizations, the ego and everything else gets in the way of us really addressing and diagnosing our real issues that we're facing, the psychological, the emotional issues. And many of the things that you were talking about, they stem from that kind of social, that psychological and social indoctrination that many of us won't take a serious look at and the serious time to really analyze and think about and try to go about fixing it collectively. So, yeah, that's just what I was thinking about as I was listening to you this morning. And I don't have any answers on how we're going to do that. I try to, when I come into contact with people, I try to raise these issues. But don't too many people listen to me anyway. Not saying that they should necessarily.
Because you broke.
That's probably the reason why, bro.
But you're on point, man. I don't know how you got so smart. I mean, how many books y'all got in Mississippi? 3, 4? And one of the 3, 4 books is a phone book. So I don't know how you got these insights, but you are absolutely correct. And especially, like you said, slavery ain't through with us. And here's the thing. Bobby E. Wright defined slavery as a situation where all of the life-sustaining institutions of a people are under the control of another people. You're enslaved. Now, slavery, you have wage slavery, chattel slavery, all kinds of different methods for slavery, but the fundamental condition of slavery is, what fundamental life-sustaining resource and institution do black people control? None. So we're still enslaved. Right. You know, and that's why I don't like all this post-slavery, post-PTSD, post-slave, ain't nothing post about what we're going through. I would like to take the word post and change it to persistent, so you can still keep the acronym. But instead of post-slavery, it's persistent slavery. Instead of post-trauma, it's persistent trauma. You know, because I'm with you. But let me tell you what the solution. I can give you the short answer where Dr. Khalid Muhammad said, there's healing in the killing and there's medicine in the murder. And basically when he said that, he took that 200-something page book, Wretched of the Earth, and broke it down into a simple statement. There's healing in the killing, there's medicine in the murder. But since the NSA is recording everything, let me back that up. And let me say, you make the path by walking it. You know, you ever been walking through the hood and they got all these cut through lots where, you know, you got the grass ain't, but there's a path that black folks then walked where it looks like a set path. Nobody came and laid that path for us. We made it by carrying out the action. We need a path, so we're going to walk the way where we want to go. And by walking that way consistently enough, the path will be made just through our walking. We don't need to dig it. We don't need to line out. We ain't even got to pave it. It will be there for us. And it'll start coming back. So the solution to this is doing the work. You know, fighting. We will rediscover, you know, or as Claude Anderson said, we got so many brilliant people. You know, if the same way you got in something, it's the same way you got out. So if you got to fight your way out, organize your way out, build your way out, same way the path out is generally the way in. So what we have to do is, the few of us who want freedom, start conducting ourselves, pooling our resources, organizing, subverting and targeting our enemies in the most rational and effective way. It's just doing the work. You know, close your eyes and start swinging. Eventually, you know, you'll develop better techniques and more effective techniques. But we just got to make this path by walking the path.
I agree with you. But many times, man, what I found when you try to deal with other people, like, I don't know, maybe you just have to stay the course. I don't know. And maybe I'm disassociating myself too quickly. from madness. Maybe I got to sit in the madness for a while and let it just, I don't know, man. But what I was about to say was many times I found I try to work with people, and it's always some dumb stuff that just derail everything. The ego, the people wanting to lord themselves over other people and wanting to kind of create this cult of personality where they the center of everything or the center of power. Or on the other hand, you got people who want to use all of the resources in a way that I feel that I have felt in the past have been squandering the resources and putting one's egg all into one basket, to use that colloquialism or whatever. So I find myself in conflict and disagreement, and because I'm not somebody that really has social standing, I guess like you were saying this morning, I'm just a broke nigga that lives in a so-called poor neighborhood, really not significant or whatever. So these people don't listen to me. And like I said before, maybe they shouldn't. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But in trying to do the work, I know that I can't do what I want to do by myself. And so much going on, especially in Mississippi, but throughout the United States. But I'm just saying Mississippi because that's where I am located right now. And you see so much of it, and you want to fight against it. And, like, all of this stuff is going on, and nobody is saying nothing about it. You got people rebelling in prison, doing hunger strikes in prison. And this stuff is coming across the news media that people look at. Nobody is saying anything. You have people being abused in the jails here. Major human rights violations, and all the people who claim to be conscious, who claim to be this or that, and fighting for black people, none of them say anything about these groups of people being abused, the most marginalized, the most subjugated being abused.
Right.
So, I don't know, man. I don't know. I just try to make contributions where I can. That's what I have resigned myself to. Where I can help, I will, but I know I still have to get with people in a more collective manner because I know I'm not going to be able to do anything by myself per se, and I know what I do in terms of my work as a lawyer. I think it's significant on a very small scale on a person, a case by case, but there ain't no way that's going to ever really bring about any real change, and it's not really any kind of revolutionary work is really kind of reactionary. You react into a situation after somebody is already in that system being swallowed up whole. So
right, but here's the thing: you have to look. Number one, this is a multi-generational struggle, and a lot of times things that you think are insignificant can have major. You know that little pamphlet that Frederick Douglass, the wife, the mistress of the plantation, she slipped him a little pamphlet. She taught him to read, just like. Because she just thought it was a novelty. She training a dog. She got a new puppy, and she just wanted to teach it a few tricks. And right. She didn't know neither did Frederick Douglass know the great reverberations that it would have with teaching this one dog new tricks, teaching this one little dirty little African boy how to read a few words and call out a few words for her own personal enjoyment. And right. Frederick Douglass, I don't know if you've ever read his writings. I mean, one of the greatest writers in the world, and his voice alone shaked the institutions of slavery to their foundation. I mean, Frederick Douglass, I mean, then, you know, I guess we're going to hold the fact that he spawned Umar Johnson, maybe. We can't even hold that against him. That's how great we won't even hold that against him. But anyway, seriously. So yeah, as you work, you know, I even now when I engage people, and like I had a young Sudanese lady who used to wait tables at our restaurant, and she was, you know, somebody, oh, she's so unconscious, she's so blah blah blah. And she would just pick up stuff. I didn't even harass. My main thing was, you know, clear them tables, you know, get that, you know. And just that was my main interactions with her. But she would overhear the dialogue. And we had all the conscious, all the revolutionary people used to come to our cafe, get one little cup of tea for $1.25 and sit there the whole day. So she was constantly just absorbing this. Yeah, you a boss. No, I'm joking. Y'all was always welcome, Cafe C. But anyway, and now she sent me a letter when she went off to college. She was in high school. She sent me a letter, and she has a level of awareness and engagement. She's an asset to the people when before she would have been a liability. Now, these right. little happenstance aren't enough, and I think we need to start talking more off the air about specific actions and how to get our resources tied together and some more specific actions and how we can create this, you know, conduit, this pipeline between Mississippi and create regional and national black power. We really need to talk, you know, off the air about that. But right. there's also very specific techniques you can use to get the maximum positive input from almost anybody, where you can work with somebody who doesn't have the full mission in their heart. You know, like, let's say with our garden, everybody that comes to work the organic garden isn't a revolutionary trying to bring down the systems and institution of white domination. They just want some asparagus, and they're willing right. to till the soil for asparagus. So you can't, and that's where you get, and that's where you and that person's interests overlap, and they might be in church all Sunday and they might be eating pork, but the fact that we both want some organic asparagus locally grown, that's where you meet and talk to them. So you can make positive contributions to the just aspirations of your people, and you can align with people. Don't always think that every one of your connections has to be absolute. You just figure out, hey, where do we overlap? Where can we both come together and make a positive contribution to our people's just aspirations, even if you are not fully conscious or even fully committed to the larger struggle? I think a lot of times we want everybody, you know, fundamentalists. It's like everybody that work for, you know, General Motors is not a capitalist.
Right.
But everybody that work there has their specific task and their specific goals. You know, and that there was a capitalist, a CEO by the name of Lee Iacocca, and he kind of formulated the thing like, how do you get somebody from the lowliest, you know, mailroom person to the highest level of the company to have this identity, to identify with the company? There are techniques that you can, once you do establish some type of functional relationship with people. When I first started doing urban agriculture, I was all up in these churches talking to these pastors right. because the pastors had a lot of unused land. All over right. the places. And you see me everywhere you look. I'm coming, walking into or leaving the church. I'm walking shoulder to shoulder with some minister. If we agree with nothing else, there's land here that's underutilized. There's an untapped resource here that we should develop. And so I don't right. need them to abandon Jesus Christ or stop, you know, taking them tithes and paying on their Cadillac. I don't need, this is the thing. This is where we overlap, and we can get this productive thing done. And that could be just one brick in our larger structure.
Right.
So
right.
you need to develop those types of techniques where you can be mission centric, they call it, or you can engage in another tactic they call agency capture. But now you're always, as I am, always trying to revolutionize the people, always trying to disseminate the information, always trying to cultivate people's consciousness. But you don't need you don't need a certain level of consciousness to dig a trench. You know, right. you don't need a certain level of consciousness to open a little storefront and operate a storefront. You know, right. you don't need to have a revolutionary Pan-African consciousness, to run a cash register. You just need right. a certain base level work ethic. So you got to meet people where they are. And if that's as far as they want to go, then you can still have a productive interaction or a productive long term relationship with them. So we don't abandon right. our fundamental goal of waking up our people, but we also don't allow the fact that our people are not fully awakened to be a hindrance. We got to learn how to flip that into an asset as well.
Right.
So, but again, you know, I'm going to be calling you because, you know, we need to, you know, move, you know, elevate, advance the dialogue and start, you know, some our cooperative mission as well. And right. you'll be here, yeah. right?
What you got?
You're coming to Chicago, right? You said you was
hitching up the donkey cart. It seemed like she was backing out on the thing.
You checking out, man? What? What? hey, man, let me tell you something, dog. ain't no none of that. Does she want protection? Does she need your protection? Tell her if you want my protection, tell her what the price is. Give her an invoice. You know. You got to tell her, you know, for the 9 months I protected you walking in these streets. You know, you got to let her know. But anyway. I'm sorry. Let's get back to reality.
She in the back.
Oh, and
she's
pregnant too, right?
Smart.
Oh yeah, and pregnant women. You know that evolutionary pregnant, very vicious. So let me lay it. But I'm all the way here in Chicago, and it's gonna take y'all at least 2 weeks to hitch up that donkey cart and make it here. So I'm safe.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, but so you're not getting on the Beverly Hillbillies truck and driving up to Chicago, I guess.
Well, hopefully we will, but like I talked to Sister Erica, and I told her I would let her know for sure and do the same with you.
Let us know. And tell your wife there's a full course vegan meal. Y'all can come over for a full course vegan meal and vegan desserts and just a wonderful, delicious vegan meal. If y'all get on that Beverly, whether y'all going to ride the donkey or y'all going to hitch up that Beverly Hillbillies, whatever y'all use for transportation way back there in Mississippi, you know,
right.
If y'all make it here, you know, y'all over for dinner and we can sit. But if not, we'll just continue this. I'll contact you off the air and we'll continue our cooperation and work and advance that. But
all right, brother.
All right, but thanks for calling in and
right, no problem,
taking
brother.
With your insights, you know. I don't know. You got to share the book. You got, and that's a big problem. It's only 4 books in Mississippi, and one of them is a phone book. And you apparently have all the books.
Nah,
spread them
nah.
around. Lend them out to the other Mississippians down there. You know.
Yeah. All right, brother. Talk
all right.
To you soon.
All right. Peace. Yeah, I gotta stop talking about Mississippi. I'm gonna run into some old corn husker. I think that's Nebraska. But I'm going to run into some corn-fed backwoods boy. Hey, I heard what you said about Mississippi. Talk that stuff now. Hey, brother. It's just social comment, you know. I'm going to dedicate this song to Adolfo. Because Adolfo, if y'all don't know, he's a runner. And he be running, you know, and then he posts like 8 miles, 12 miles. That little social media thing where you run and it tracks how far you run and you can post it on the internet, trying to shame everybody, trying to show how much better and consistent he is with his regime, you know. And I know he only does that not for his health, but to try to show us that he's better than us. And okay, fine, Adolfo's better than us. All you physically fit people, good for you. Here's a biscuit. I hope it makes you fat. But anyway, I'm gonna dedicate this trap. I wasn't gonna play this, but it's a great song, so it's a treat. So don't feel deprived. This is Runner's High to Brother Adolfo. Hopefully, this will lift his spirits a little bit. And y'all in Mississippi, y'all get it together and rise up and overthrow the system so Brother Adolfo can get in better spirits. All right, Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680. Stick Man, Runner's High. Pass me by. Pushing forward at a comfortable pace. The race is not for the swift. I just take it in stride. Yeah. Feel like I'm touching the sky. No drug in my veins, I got a runner's high. I put my soul on the concrete. The rhythm of my breath controls my heartbeat. Adrenaline pumping, leg muscles working. I take off on the runway. The asphalt is my airport. But I fly with my feet on the floor. Get away for an hour or more. When I run, I can feel the breeze. I feel free and at ease. Like a bird flying over the sea. Like an African gazelle running wild and free. I see the dirt roads in Kenya. The Maasai speaking. It's the same blood that runs through me. When it feels like I'm running all empty, or running out of time, or stress keep running through my mind. I resolve to continue, keep my chest up, pushing forward, overstanding everything has to run its course. My legs are my wings, they allow me to soar and endure. This life is a dream.